Today, a movie we'll like to review Gone Girl and Hector and the Search for Happiness. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, the show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm really excited about the movies we're going to talk about today.
It's a Rosamund Pike special.
It is, yeah. Is she a lead in Hector and the Search?
She is. I'd say supporting.
Yeah, no, because obviously that's one I didn't see. Did you see that one?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was I out of town on work for that one?
Yes.
I had a scheduling conflict.
I think you had a scheduling conflict.
I had to work out instead. I know. It's a horrible movie. What a horrible reason to miss a movie. But
I know.
The moment you're over 40, you have to kind of schedule time to look after your health.
And I'm glad you do.
I hate it. It sucks. It's like I miss being 20 years old and just eating whatever I like and doing nothing.
But we never did that.
I did. I did that a lot. You know I did that. Like, entire weekend spent playing video games. And anyhow.
Rosamund Pike's been working out.
Yes, she has.
That's a good segue, yes.
we're going to talk about it when we talk about Gone Girl. But it was like the most coveted role, you know. Everybody in Hollywood wanted that role. And, you know, I don't think most people know of Rosamund Pike, certainly. And when the book was first released, Reese Witherspoon bought the rights for it up front. And she obviously wanted to play that role. And when David Fincher came on to direct the movie, he had a different vision for how this character should be. So, you know, she very graciously gave up the rights of the movie to the studio and to David Fincher. And she only has a producer credit on the movie. But, you know, every actor, Emily Blunt was in the reckoning. Charlize Theron was in the reckoning. And I think it was kind of interesting that Fincher chose relative unknown Rosamund Pike to do
Nicole
it.
Nicole Kidman would have been interested in a role like this.
Yeah. So it's a brave move for Fincher to pick her, and we can discuss whether it was the right choice.
Hmm.
So, yeah, why don't we just jump into the Gone Girl review? Who's introing that?
That'll be me.
Okay.
So Gone Girl has been a book which has annoyed a lot of people because it's been forever on the bestseller list for years and years and years. It's probably the most popular book in the last 3 years. It's written by Gillian Flynn, who incidentally used to be a film critic for Entertainment Weekly until she was laid off. And she very interested, you know, she had written two previous books, which were reasonably well regarded critically, but she kind of used her experience from getting laid off from Entertainment Weekly to kind of use that as one of the plot points for her third book, which was Gone Girl. And I think one of our biggest struggles today is going to be to talk about this movie without giving anything away.
Yeah.
Because so much of this movie depends on what you know about it. And I recommend mm-hmm. that if you're going to watch this movie, and I would recommend people watch it, that you actually stop listening to us right now and maybe come back after you've seen the movie, because it's...
Should we do a spoiler alert with this
we'll try not to reveal too much, but even what little we discuss might ruin the experience for you. So I'm just going to say this much, that Gone Girl is the story of a couple which has to... You know, a very affluent couple or, you know, a young affluent couple in New York City who both lose their jobs and they have to move back to the home of the town in which the husband grew up. And then on the fifth anniversary of their wedding, the wife disappears, and hence the title Gone Girl. The movie is directed by David Fincher, who is probably one of the leading living American actors, American directors working right now. And this is his most recent movie after his inexplicable remake of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo last year. But he, of course, famously made Seven, and he made Fight Club.
Yes, I was going to say, one of my favorite movies of all time.
The Social Network.
The Social Network, which I love.
Benjamin Button, he's made, you know, many, many, many accomplished films, and this is his latest one. It stars Ben Affleck as Nick Dunn, and Rosamund Pike, British actor, as his wife Amy Dunn, And it also has newcomer Catherine Kuhn. It has Patrick Fugit is in it. And Neil Patrick Harris is in the movie as well. This movie has come with a lot of expectations by virtue of being based on this very popular book and by virtue of the fact that it's directed by David Fincher.
And sorry, did you say you'd read the book?
I have not. I've only read the first chapter of the book, and I'd hope to read the rest of it, and we can discuss this. I'm almost glad I did not read the rest of it. Yeah. What did you guys think of
Gone Girl? I always look forward to a Fincher movie, but I have to say I'm a little disappointed by this latest offering. Although it's not bad, it's not brilliant, and I think despite exceptional acting by both Ben Affleck and Rosamund Pike, and indeed Neil Patrick Harris, I kept feeling like this was a take on that really bad made-for-TV movie about Scott and Lacey Peterson, starring Dean Cain.
Joe? Yeah, I mean, the Scott Peterson narrative is obviously an inspiration for this story. It's the Ben Affleck character deals with a lot of what Scott Peterson was put through in the media. You know, the difference here is, you know, we don't know with Scott. Well, I guess it was the same with Scott Peterson. You know, we didn't know whether he was innocent or guilty. So there's all this media mudslinging going on, and that's a big part of what this film is. But I thought this was phenomenal. This is really going to be, you know, this is my kind of stuff. It was dark, incredibly stylishly made. I mean, I think, you know, Fincher really had labored over every scene in this movie to make it perfect. The story itself is convoluted and unravels in a way that kept me surprised. And I think the ending is going to stay with me forever. This movie ends in a particular way. I'd be really curious to see if the book ended in that same way, because honestly, when it was over, I was literally like picking my jaw up off the floor and trying to understand, you know, what kind of decision process led to ending a movie that way. And it's really hard to do this without spoilers. So that's all I'll say, but I'm going to say, you know, right off the bat, terrific stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I literally could talk about this movie for hours. I've been dying to talk about it forever. I mean, and
it's not been that long since we saw it. We only saw it this week, right?
Yeah, we saw it like...
But it needs discussion.
Yeah, it needs a
lot of discussion. And because I couldn't discuss it with the two of you, because we don't discuss movies before we get on the podcast, I've been reading about this voraciously, and there have been so many reviews. It's kind of energized the whole film reviewing committee. I mean, community. I mean, there's so much written about this movie. And there's
and
so much...
polarizing.
It's very polarizing. And... I don't even know where to begin, but I'll say this much. I think for me, the movie worked really, really well until I thought Fincher kind of loses control over the material in the final act. And I don't think it's Fincher's fault. I think a lot of it rests at the feet of the script. And by the way, the script is written by Gillian Flynn, who wrote the book on which it is based. And I think the intent of the book, and certainly of the movie, is that it plays this game with the audience where one of shifting loyalties, where, you know, you start off feeling sorry for it's about Nick and Amy Dunn. You start off feeling bad for Nick because his wife has gone missing. Then you find certain things about Nick that are revealed to you and you feel really bad for Amy. And then you kind of find out more about Nick and, you know, more about Amy. And then you're feeling like, oh, my God. And then you think, well, maybe he did kill her. And then you feel bad for her again.
But
so it's
I
doing this.
I love that about the movie.
I know. And so the script is constantly doing these somersaults. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't want to give too much away, but it's one kind of movie until about the halfway mark, and then it becomes a totally different kind of movie.
Again, I love that.
And then the last part of the movie belongs in some other Brian De Palma kind of movie.
I love that.
It's a weird mashup, and I think in a book with a very expert writer that might have all stuck together. But that last part of the movie seemed like something out of an 80s Sharon Stone movie.
I agree.
It does not belong in this fine, deft, withering satire of how we live today. I mean, I think this book is so big. It's talking about, you know, how we are so quick to accuse somebody, how
media
ruins everything, how quick we are to ascribe blame. And it's all of this stuff And then it becomes a Cinemax movie in the last act, I thought, you know. It kind of reminded me of that Steven Soderbergh movie, Side Effects, a little bit.
Yes.
And again, I don't want to give too much away, but... So there's so much I can say about it. I mean, a lot of people have about the structure of how it's given. I think the movie is... So it's playing this game, right, of allegiances. Do you feel more sorry for the husband or the wife? But by virtue of how the movie is structured, and I believe the book is structured the same way, it gives one of them an unfair advantage because they're both speaking at different times, right? The story is told once from the perspective of Nick and once from, you know, and sometimes from the perspective of Amy. But when it's told from the perspective of Nick, it's how things are unfolding in reality. Whereas the things you're told from the perspective of Amy is based on a diary that she's written, and it becomes obvious that she might not be a very reliable narrator. So I think it kind of, you know, unfairly gives advantage to one of them compared to the other.
I don't even mind about that. This is I had some problems with the movie right from the outset, and it just didn't make sense to me. Okay, so I just found myself thinking, why wouldn't he call her cell phone? He never called her cell phone to find out where she is. And
well,
then
I'm
secondly,
sure he does.
Well, we never see that happen, right? And then the second thing that didn't make sense was he comes home to a scene where it looks like someone's been in their house.
And broken things.
And then suddenly we have the detectives at his house. Why didn't the police come first? So that jump to getting straight into the detective narrative happened immediately.
I mean, I've never been on a murder scene, but I'm pretty sure that if there is a disappearance of somebody...
Right, but it wasn't even 24 hours until the person had disappeared. There was no blood. It was very strange. That took me out of the moment because I just kept thinking, this is so weird.
I presume that...
So I couldn't even move on from there.
Until you mention it. Now that you mention it, it makes sense.
Very weird.
The way I would rationalize it is, you know, she comes from a very Tony lineage. I mean, you know, her parents are these...
Right.
You know, they're writers of these books.
Right, and she's a character in a story.
She's a character in a story that everybody knows. So I guess if...
She's not a celebrity.
She's a celebrity. So for example, if the daughter of... I don't know, if the daughter of a very famous
Elvis,
children's book right, went missing, then I presume there would be a lot of scrutiny about that.
Yeah.
I think that's a little bit nitpicky,
but and obviously the movie wasn't working for you at that point, and that can happen. I think for me, it took a while for me to kind of settle into what was going on here because, you know, I did approach it with absolutely no knowledge of the source material. So I was, you know, just starting to settle into kind of a, you know, a whodunit kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then I think that's in many ways is why I did enjoy the experience so much, because the movie kept catching me off guard by these shifts that you've spoken of, Yazdi. So,
and then it so reminded me of The Game, incidentally, which was also directed by Fincher. And I love that movie, The Game. I know it didn't really get a lot of good
the
press back in the day.
Gwyneth Paltrow and Michael Douglas.
I really, and Sean Penn. Mm-hmm. Really good movie. But it reminded me so much of that movie because, you know, there are all these clues that I thought, oh, this is all going to be a big game in the end. You know, it was very reminiscent of like I said, the made-for-TV movie about Scott and Lacey and then The Game.
So there is the shadow of that whole Scott and Lacey Peterson over the whole book. But I mean, with all its fault, with all the issues I have, I think the movie is brilliant. I mean, I don't think it's David Fincher's best movie by a mile.
No.
Not even close to it. And I think the movie inherently has a lot of flaws. And I really do think he loses control over the material at the end. But even then, who is making these kind of R-rated, intelligent, adult, complex maze of movies right now? Mm-hmm. You know, all you're seeing is stupid comedies,
young
or horror films, or young adult stuff. And just the very fact that somebody has done a very handsome, very considered, very, very accomplished version of what is a beach read crime novel, you know, in a way, it's pretty damn miraculous.
Yeah.
So I found the direction very kinetic, almost a Danny Boyle-esque, hard to watch at times. Did any of you have that problem?
I didn't have a problem with it. I mean, it was very deliberately directed. And, you know, I watched the trailer again this afternoon just to remind me of some elements of the movie. You know, each shot is very deliberately made. You know, there's one of Ben Affleck just taking out the trash, where, you know, where he's positioned in the frame, and you know, it's Fincher, and I think he sets up his shots and his scenes in a very specific manner. So yeah, it can be a little distracting. I think all the directors have that kind of signature. All the big directors that, you know, that we always talk about have that kind of feel to their movies. And this one felt in every frame, you felt Fincher's presence behind the camera, just like you do with a, you know, a Tarantino movie, or, you know, a Danny Boyle movie.
Or a Christopher Nolan movie. It does feel a little overproduced. You know what? Yeah. It feels like there's a slight fussiness about it.
That's what I felt.
Every shot feels like it's been fussed over so much.
Yeah.
You know? It's a very clean image as well. I mean, yeah. it's like...
The only time it bothered me was, I think there's a scene in the movie, and maybe it's just that I'm getting older, but... There's a scene where the two characters meet for the first time, when Nick and Amy meet mm-hmm. at this party.
Yeah.
And, you know, brilliant score, you know, very jarring, discordant score, which runs through the whole
Reznor.
Movie. Trent
yeah.
Reznor's score. But that score, the jarring, bizarre score, so they're meeting at a party and there is some background music playing. And on top of it, there is this discordance. And I couldn't actually hear the dialogue they were saying. I was having difficulty hearing what they were saying.
I think I had the same
problem. I struggled with it. I'm like, Lord, I know you want to create this blending of effects, but I can't even hear what you're saying.
Clearly, Fincher is having a bit of a love affair with Trent Reznor after what they did together in The Social Network.
Yeah.
And Reznor's, you know, score for The Social Network was, you know, almost a character in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
He's given Reznor a little bit, you know, too much respect, I think, in this movie by, you know, obviously he's had him score it, but he also wants everyone to hear that it's Trent Reznor playing. And, you know, that's the former lead man of Nine Inch Nails. Mm-hmm. He's now, I don't know how many movies he's scored, but, I mean, he definitely did a terrific job with Social Network.
And I was kind of wanting more of the Neil Patrick Harris. It was really good to see Neil Patrick Harris in a serious role,
against
and he
type.
Did a very
much
good,
against type, yeah.
Yeah, and he was very good in it.
But he comes off as a plot device.
Yes, I agree. I agree. But I wanted to see more of that.
Yeah.
More of that story.
The other thing, which kind of this, I mean, this is a problem, not a problem, but this is an issue with the book as much as the movie. But this is one of the most damning, you know, most damning commentaries on the state of the marriage that I've ever seen. This is a person who feels very, very lowly about the whole institution of marriage. I mean, this is a withering, bitter, nasty, impugning.
That at all.
Yeah. The whole point
it was
of this
damning
whole,
of a marriage, but not of marriage as an institution.
Yeah, I agree.
It just felt,
I agree.
Because
yeah.
you reach a point, and this
I
is
agree
a,
with Joe. What I'm saying, I didn't get
yeah,
that
I know,
yesterday.
I
yeah,
but I kind of reached a point. And this, I've read reviews of people who have read the book, and the people who have had issues with the book, everybody loves the book, but the ones who have had an issue with the book is this issue that after a while you say, both of these people are so horrible. I don't care for either one of them. They're doing such horrible things. And the movie cannot kind of break out of that. And I think that's why I had a real issue with that last act of the movie where somebody does something so wrong that there's no going back beyond that point. It's like, this is, why would you even want to be in the same room as somebody who did this?
See, I think that was actually
but again, maybe we're getting
bits.
Into spoiler territory.
Yeah, no, yeah. I was going to say, I think that's actually one of the best bits of the movie is that it...
Careful.
It tells... I know, I'm thinking about how to say this. It tells actually how you can feel in a relationship. And how this couple, should they have even got together in the beginning, but how quickly things change when there are stresses on a marriage. I really like the fact that
yeah,
it doesn't take
absolutely.
Much to break down a marriage.
Well, apart
and how,
from...
And how quickly that happens, or how can happen if you're with the wrong person.
Well, there's a bit more to it than that, because, I mean, clearly one of the characters in this movie has some issues that need to be addressed. It's not a normal marriage in the sense of two normal people trying to work through difficult issues. There is somebody here who is broken and is pushed to certain things. So that's all I'll say, I think, without getting into spoilers.
So I think of all the things the movie is, it's a whodunit. Then at another point, it becomes a revenge story. And then eventually it becomes this, you know, Sharon Stone movie. of all the things it is, and it's so many things. I honestly can talk about this movie for a long time. And that's why I love that there's a movie that we can talk about so much. But I think what the movie is brilliantly, brilliantly successful at is about a satire of media right now. And I think it does such a great job. You know, there's this whole character, very, very similar to the Nancy Grace character on CNN, who is, you know, so quick to
loathsome,
and, you know,
Jim hates watching her. I really enjoy watching
and her. And it fits, and, you know, even with Celia Ward, who plays the other person who's interviewing Nick, you know, after his wife goes missing, and how, you know, he does this press conference, and, you know, there's a giant picture of his wife, and he stands next to it, and people are taking pictures, and then at one point he smiles.
Well, somebody said, "Smile, Nick."
Somebody says, "Smile, Nick," and he smiles, and that's the only picture that the media shows, showing that, look, this guy's smiling when his wife has gone missing. And there's this whole other thing about somebody who takes a picture, a selfie with him, and puts it online. That kind of stuff, you know, it's very hard to do. You know, it can come off heavy-handed, it can come off shallow, but it really totally captures where we are at right now. And I think that's the movie's greatest accomplishment in terms of this commentary on how we see crime and how we all become judges and how we are so quick to... It's like an indictment of an entire nation, right? We are all judging, like...
I couldn't agree with you more.
That's very well done.
Incredibly well done. And, you know, I think just the whole atmosphere and graphics that they put along that whole media piece is spot on. It's exactly how it is.
And we forgot Tyler Perry. And again, such an against-grain character.
Yeah.
And we can talk about the acting as well. This is about as good as I've seen Ben Affleck be, and he's usually a little smug, a little self-centered, a little conceited. He can't hide that from his persona, and yet it works wonderfully because...
He needs to be those things
because that's exactly what gets him into trouble, because he comes off so cavalier after his wife goes missing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think really good call, and I've been reading voraciously about everybody been writing about this movie, but Gillian Flynn, who wrote it, you know, when David Fincher reached out to her to write the screenplay for the book, she said, "I'm not going to tell you who to hire, but please, for Nick Dunn," she said, "please, please get Ben Affleck." So that's some degree of, you know, vote of confidence that the writer themselves picks.
Well, she had him in mind when she was writing him, obviously.
And of course, Rosamund Pike. I mean, depth, emotionally, physically, unbelievable.
I think
this will put her on the map. I've loved her since
An Education.
Yeah.
You know, she's always kind of been in the shadows, and you keep waiting for her to kind of get, you know, a lead role. And it's amazing that Fincher gives her this plum role. And I don't think she quite succeeds. This might not be her best work, but again, I don't think it's her. I think, again, it's this character which is somersaulting higher and higher. All the characters are somersaulting higher and higher until at some point they just, you know,
careen
out of reality. Yeah. So great.
And then Sharon Stone happened.
I really like the character who played his sister. How this is my pet peeve with all movies. Roger Ebert used to complain about this. Most movies completely disregard the fact that characters have brothers and sisters and mothers and nieces and nephews. If they're not part of, you know, if they're not moving the plot forward, you never see these other characters.
Yeah.
Well, here's a character of his sister who doesn't have any other baggage, but she's such a fully realized character.
Yeah.
And I love the actor who played her. I think
Carrie Coon.
I really like the actor who played the lead detective, Kim Dickens.
Yeah, that was very reminiscent of Fargo for me.
Yes.
The
Frances McDormand-ish character. So some really good acting.
Yeah. Okay. So we could go for on and on and on about this
movie, but we won't.
So, Yazdi, why don't you go first?
You know, I really don't know what to say. I think this movie... Remember there was a movie in the 80s with Michael Douglas and Catherine...
Turner?
Catherine Turner, called War of the Roses.
Yeah.
Okay, where this husband and wife keep upping the ante in terms of, you know, they're fighting and they keep doing worse and worse and worse and worse things to each other. Well, I think this is the Special Victims Unit edition of A War of the Roses. But I would strongly, strongly recommend people to go watch this movie simply because there's nothing quite like it. It's so intelligent. It's so accomplished. It has all its faults. I think it completely falls apart at the end. I had a major problem with the ending. For me, the ending was completely not work. It didn't work for me at all. I'm like, what? 2.5 hours of the movie and this is what it comes down to? So the ending didn't work. But be that as it may, I think if you're a lover of movies, you need to celebrate this film. 7.5 out of 10. Which I'm going to back down to 7, unfortunately.
Really?
Okay. I don't know. Maybe I think I need to see this movie again. I really want to see this movie again.
God, that's 2.5 hours.
Yeah, and maybe I'll move it to an 8.
Yeah, Joe.
2.5 hours are the best time I've spent in a theatre this year. I mean, this was my cup of tea. I mean, I like its darkness. I really liked the tone. And I really, really appreciated the fact that I didn't know anything about the movie. I took it at face value to begin with, and it took me along that journey. And then everything starts to morph into something, you know, more, and then it morphs again. And for me, I love it when that happens because I was just completely surprised by it and delighted by the way it all kind of fit together in the end. So a 9 out of 10 for me. This is really, really good stuff. I'm not alone, I think, in that.
No,
as I look at Rotten Tomatoes here, it's getting 87%. So for once, I'm in tune with the world out there. But I love this stuff. Finch has really done a good job here.
So the twists and turns are good, but the movie overall is just too long. And towards the end, I just wanted it to come to an end. In fact, I think it actually had about 3 false ends. It could have ended twice before. This feels like a thriller inside a thriller inside a thriller. It's good, but it's not great. Although I have to commend the range and breadth of Miss Pike, both physically and emotionally, and the great acting from everyone in the movie. It just didn't work as brilliantly as it did for you, Joe. For me, it's a 6 out of 10.
Wow.
Even, 6, 7 out of 10. I would say a 6 out of 10. I wanted it to be more. I wish it would have been more. Like you, Yazdi, the end, it was crazy. That last act was so crazy.
And the very final scene too was like
crazy.
Brilliant. I think after, maybe we can come back with our next podcast and then do a
spoiler alert.
Spoiler-free just discussion
Statute
about it.
Statute of limitations on spoilers. One podcast.
But.
Okay.
All right, let's move into our second movie of the week, which is Hector and the Search for Happiness. So Rashmi, I think you're going to tell us
about this.
So this
is the plot, yeah. A psychiatrist searches the globe to find the secret of happiness. This is directed by Peter Chalsom.
Peter Chalsom.
That's hard when you have two consonants together, right? Peter Chalsom. And it's written by Maria von Helland, Peter Chalsom, and Tinka Lindsay. But it's actually based on a French novel called Le Voyage de Hector ou la Recherche de Bonheur by François Lalonde. So it's actually based on a French book.
Thank you.
Was that not bad, was it?
That wasn't bad. Okay. That wasn't bad.
I think you should do it.
I'm not going to do it.
But it stars Simon Pegg and Rosamund Pike again. So Yazdi and I think are the only
ones. Tony
Collette.
Christopher Plummer. Yes. Stellan Skarsgård. Yes. So this is a great cast and one that I'm really disappointed I missed.
Well,
should I be?
So Yazdi and I were the only ones who saw this. So Yazdi.
So I think this is the kind of story that probably plays so much better in the written word, but will not come off well in a film because I think it plays with very wide concepts. You know, that when you try to visually transcribe them on the screen, they will come off seeming glib, no matter how you do it. So I think when you're talking about search for happiness, you know, most people are going to roll their eyes right off the bat. And that might work very well in a book, but I think with the most sincerity, it's very hard to relay that on the film screen. And in many ways, this film shares its DNA with The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. Mm-hmm. And I think like that other film, an individual's response will depend entirely on how they're wired. And we've talked about this. If you are not wired for schmaltz, this movie is going to be hell for you.
So is it schmaltzy? Because I thought maybe it would be a comedy with Peg at the helm.
It is a comedy, but it really is about a man who's trying to find happiness, as silly and stupid as it sounds. But I think what this movie does, and I've read a few reviews of it, and some people are genuinely offended by it, because what it does is it's about this person who's kind of, as you mentioned, it's kind of set in his ways. His life is very prescribed and rote, and he doesn't feel any energy, and so he just takes off. And he goes and visits these foreign cultures, and he kind of tries to find the secret to happiness. And some people think that the movie is quite offensive about its opinion of those cultures and its portrayal of those cultures. You know, he goes to Africa, and he goes to
China,
and he goes to a few other places. But be that as it may, I think it worked for me. I mean, I think if you're going to buy, you know, a coming of age, not a coming of age of a child, but a coming of age of an adult who kind of
emotional maturity moment.
Emotional maturity, who comes to try to find out what is important for him.
So you liked it?
I did like it. Okay. I think the movie works. Sorry, that was a very long intro.
Yeah, so I was like, come on, Yazdi, get to the punchline.
Rashmi's chewing on her pen here.
Yeah, so I think we had the same discussion during Walter Mitty, because I think we were on the same sides of the fence. We shall remain on, Yazdi and I. So I imagine that this is a much better book than it was a movie. That kind of gives you a flavor of what I think. Although I totally agree with Yazdi. It's not a million miles from Walter Mitty. But for me, it was so tonally inconsistent. And the transformation of this character was so incredibly ridiculous and fast that I thought I was watching three different movies. That, coupled with really bad dialogue, made this a really difficult film to watch. I really didn't enjoy this movie. I was just cringing. I was literally cringing watching the movie. I was just thinking, oh my God, this is so bad.
I think it works at multiple levels. Again, if the sound of a man searching for happiness, you know, makes you roll your eyes, I think it's not going to work for you. But I think it also works as a travelogue. I just enjoyed it, like Walter Mitty, I enjoyed it as a travelogue, you know, about his experiences when he goes to Shanghai, and his experiences when he goes to, you know, Africa, and his experiences when he goes to Los Angeles. And, you know, he's kind of this selfish idiot who thinks the world revolves around him. And, you know, I really liked his interaction with Toni Collette. I don't think the part with Christopher Plummer worked particularly well, because by that point it had become kind of tacky, but I kind of admired it just as, you know, as a man's journey. And it kind of, in many ways, it's Homer's Iliad or Odyssey, or one of them. You know, man searches for himself and comes back, so searches the world for
and
happiness.
Right under his
and
nose
comes
all
back
the time,
home to
right?
find it. And so this.
That's the Wizard of Oz.
I know, but I don't know. I
done
like
well.
I like this journey.
Yeah. So here's the problem, okay? Hector went from a tight, closed, almost Asperger's type character and transformed into Mr. Bean in the event of one scene.
He didn't become Mr. Bean.
He did. The plane scene. I mean, literally, we went from this, like you said, very organized, prescribed, almost OCD type character into someone who drops plates on planes because he wants to see that they're not unbreakable. I mean, that's ridiculous from one scene to the next. And then I think the drawings and the animation, in that recent movie we watched, which was What If, although I think this was executed better, it still came off as a bit of a film school project, and it was also precious. And there were some really bad things happening. I mean, this man was cheating on his partner in the event of one travel cycle.
Yeah, but why is that forgivable for the trip to Italy? And it's
not
okay.
Forgivable. What I'm saying is it's never a case of is it forgivable or not. It's just so out of character for someone who's searching for happiness. And I love the fact that he's searching for happiness and he feels like he's going to travel the world. How he did it just didn't make sense with the character that he started off as. So that's where it just completely imploded on itself. I was like, stop this rubbish, please. And actually, the film almost melted. There was actually two points in the movie in the screening we were in where the film broke down. And I was almost hopeful that it was going to break and we could walk out.
I don't know. I think if you like The 100-Foot Journey, if you like A Million Dollar Arm, I think you will like this movie.
But he turns up to strange people's houses with no rhyme or reason but knocks on the door and says, are you happy?
But
it's so random.
But it's meant to be a parable.
Right. Is it meant to be a depiction of somebody in a real world situation that goes on this? Or is it a bit more playful than that?
Because it's very, very, very playful. So there's...
Well, it's playful and then it's, again, I mean, then he ends up in... I don't want to give anything away, but then there's a point where his life is in danger.
Yeah, but again, I think that's played more for laughs. No?
There was nothing funny about that segment to me.
And I think a lot of people have that issue. Of all the stuff I've read, people really have an issue of how the scenes in Africa are handled. They thought it was very offensive.
It was very offensive.
But I, you know, there. Okay, so little as he's going along, okay, he's seeing things, he's meeting people, he runs into Stellan Skarsgård, he has this affair with this woman who he doesn't realize is a prostitute. Anyway, I'm giving things away, but...
But who cares? Don't go watch this movie.
But I think along the way, he finds little things which he writes in his notebook. And they're complete Hallmark things. It's like, you know, happiness is being loved for who you really are. Is this going to make your skin crawl? Or is it going to make you settle in and go, oh? You know, so it depends on what kind of person you are.
Depends on the moment for me. Yeah, it could be. There's...
And, you know, I think there's a great little piece about his relationship with his friend who works as a Red Cross person. So there were two or three moments in the movie where I was moved to tears. I was genuinely moved to tears. And I think the movie kind of is going for this Wizard of Oz kind of thing where he goes on this adventure. A lot of it is not very realistic. Like, you know, he meets this woman on the plane to Africa and then she invites him over to her house and the whole village shows up and they're all singing and dancing.
And they have the soup.
And they have the soup made of sweet potato. It reads like a children's book. It's not, I don't think it's meant to be real. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
Is it as trippy as
No, not as trippy. And again, you know, like we just spoke about Rosamund Pike. Rosamund Pike is a great actress, but her character is so mixed up. I cannot believe that this character, Rosamund Pike, would be with this guy called Hector. This character, Hector. It makes no sense.
Why, is she and too pretty or too nice or...
All of the above. It's just such a strange pairing. And then how it unravels and so weird.
I bought it because you need somebody as inherently kind and good. And she's flawed, but she's good. For me, his journey was worthwhile because she represented what he needed to come back to. You know, that was what was at stake. Somebody that good. I mean, clearly he doesn't deserve her. But when he realizes, after going everywhere, that she's worth fighting for. Again, it sounds like a cheesy, sitcom.
Okay, I have to stop talking about this. Yes, I'm seething now.
All right, so why don't you guys wrap it up? Rush me.
Okay, so... The intent of the movie is good. I'll give you that, Yazdi. But the execution is substandard. I loved seeing my hometown London, and it did make me want to visit China, but I neither felt happier nor discovered the secret to happiness having watched this movie. Save your happiness and avoid this movie. Oh,
yow.
3 out of 10.
What? Oh, come on.
I almost gave it 2, but it was so nice to see London.
And Africa and Shanghai and Los Angeles.
But I don't think it did Africa any justice, having been there, right?
I haven't seen it, so.
Okay. Yes, so I think this movie has a lot of missteps. I think towards the very end, it literally is trying to find like a scientific explanation for happiness where it kind of had lost its way.
Oh, God, I just rolled my eyes because I remembered that bit.
You know, so I think that part doesn't quite work, but... I just saw it as an adventure. For me, it felt like a merry-go-round, like a fun little...
That eventually makes you sick.
No, a fun little ride through this person's life. And it almost felt very much like a children's book to me. You know, like, oh, the places you will go. It almost feels like a Dr. Seuss kind of story to me. I think ultimately what I liked about the movie, its textures, its use of music and color, its earnestness, I think it ultimately outweighed the few missteps that it made. And again, like I said, this sort of, you know, broad meaning of life thing is very hard to do. So considering all of those things, I really enjoyed the movie. It moved me to tears, like I said, in a couple of places. And just because it has its heart in the right place, I give it 7.5 out of 10, which I'm going to back down to 7. See it, Joe. You will have to be the...
I'll need to be the arbiter here.
The arbitrator, yes.
The arbiter, yeah.
Yes.
All right.
And you like Simon Pegg? No?
I think... I'm looking on Rotten Tomatoes, and there are some really funny comments, okay? Because James Vernier from the Boston Herald wrote, "A grueling slog. It left me very unhappy."
I mean, from the sound of it, honestly, I think I'm going to side with Rashmi on this one, but...
Did you see 100-Foot Journey?
Not yet, no. That's another one we met. Okay. So that's the schmaltzy one.
Yes, Million Dollar Arm.
No, we missed that one too. That's not been
I did see Million Dollar Arm.
Yeah.
I didn't love it as much as you, Yazdi.
Yeah, so I think if you like those kinds of movies, if you are wired for schmaltz, I think you'll like it.
But
As a Gone Girl fan, I don't think I'm as wired for schmaltz.
This is not for Gone Girl fans.
As a Killer Joe fan.
But again, like Mitty, I think visually it's so beautiful. It's really kinetic. It's like there's song and dance and visuals and little things coming on the screen and jumping around and...
Give me the sick bag already. It's that kinetic. It's like, give me the sick bag already.
Okay.
And let's land this plane.
And on that note, let's land this podcast. Mail at movierollers.com, twitter.com/movierollers, and facebook.com/movierollers as well. Do hit up our main site whenever you can. We'd love to get your comments, and there's lots of additional content there for you as well. So,
this should be a wrangle. I think we should wrangle this one.
Yeah.
Hector,
I think.
Do you think enough people have seen it to make it worthwhile?
Hmm.
I know it's been a very small opening. I think it's kind of come and gone, but.
I do, yeah.
Wrangle it anyway.
We'll wrangle.
just while we're there, just thanks to our friends over at Wrangle, RANGL.com. Great partnership with Movie Wallers that we have going on right now. You can hit up their site, you can create wrangles and debate about anything you like, not just movies. But if you go to the Movie Wallers section, the wrangle page, that you'll find the wrangle for the podcast, and I will make sure I put a link for this Hector and the Search for Happiness wrangle in the podcast show notes as well. So go over there and fight over who's right and who's wrong about Hector and the Search for Happiness. Until our next podcast, it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.